Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 168 of Rogue Startups, the post-MicroConf edition. Mr. Craig, how are you today?
I'm good, man. I've gotten over my Twitter envy that I was furiously following the MicroConf hashtag last week and reading a lot of Patio 11 and everybody tweeting about all the talks and stuff. So I am very much looking forward to diving into not just like, did you have fun? Was it interesting and stuff? Because I think that's always the case. But I think we're hoping in this episode to unpack some of the things that you took away that other people can learn too, myself included and everybody else, that maybe like wasn't in the, you know, MicroConf recap notes and stuff like that, but just kind of the vibe and some of the takeaways that you got out of MicroConf last week.
Oh boy. Yeah. It's always so hard to unpack because there's, you know, some pretty dense stuff that goes on there in terms of just the hallway track and the quality of the speakers and, you know, everybody gets something a little different out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I was having this conversation with several different people, especially those that had been to MicroConf a lot. And, you know, the general consensus, I think, for those that have been there for five or more years is that the talks get slowly less valuable over time. And that has nothing to do with the speakers. It has to do with where you are at. It has to do with what knowledge you've assimilated and what you are applying in your business and what is important and what is applicable to you at that point. Like 10 years ago when I first started all of this stuff in MicroConf, well, nine really, I was an open book. I was a sponge. So much of this stuff was new. So much of this stuff was unfamiliar. So every talk was like, oh my God, that's changing my life. Oh my God, that changed my life too. Oh my God, there's another life-changing talk. And then now it's like, oh, there's a tactic I could really use. But it's like, you know, Joanna Wiebe and Jason Fried and Chris Savage and Sahil from Gumroad. I mean, these people are all high quality speakers, high hitting entrepreneurs. High hitting? Is that even a thing?
High caliber.
Thank you.
You're getting like me. I lose some of my English idioms because I don't use them as often anymore.
Yeah, well, I unfortunately don't have the excuse of speaking a second language at home. I'm just an idiot. So, that's the experience I'm kind of coming away with from MicroConf each year now, is that, you know, there's less and less tactical stuff on the talks, but the relationships that I have with people there are getting deeper and richer, and we spend more time catching up on businesses and finding out where we're at and what's happened to you in the last year and where are you at and doing partnerships. And, you know, it's a very different experience now than it was 9 years ago for me. Yeah. But it's still my favorite conference of the year. It's still extremely valuable. It was still the best 5 days I spend on my business, really.
Awesome. Yeah. You know, I think that the point you're making about the kind of direct value of the talks being less as you progress further in your business is something really important for people who are just starting out or maybe, you know, just getting started or whatever, is that you have this like shiny object syndrome. And I'm like absolutely the worst at this. It's just like, oh, I need to run Facebook ads. Oh, I need to start a podcast. Oh, I need to blog. Oh, I need to do LinkedIn cold outreach. All of that stuff has worked for somebody, but it probably won't work for you, at least in the same way that somebody presents it at a conference talk a year and a half after it started working for them. So I think it's almost good for you to be able to go to the conference and say, I don't need all of this like tactical stuff. I need like maybe some of the higher level learning, meta learning kind of things, because then you don't get like sidetracked and distracted by all of these shiny objects of marketing tactics and stuff like that, that I think, I mean, just thinking back myself 3 years, like I would go, like when I went to MicroConf, I left and I had like three or four things I had to do for my business and they're all marketing tactics. And you can't execute hardly one of them if you're, you know, part-time bootstrapped at, you know, at one time. So I think that's like kind of a good thing for you to be able to, I want to say like rise above some of that, but I'm sure it provides more clarity after the conference, you know?
It does. And in some cases, like if you've never been exposed to that marketing tactic before, hearing how somebody else did that is extremely valuable. And then if you've tried that tactic, hearing how somebody else went through it is interesting to compare that to your own experience. And if you were failing at that tactic, then seeing somebody else succeed might highlight something that you missed. So there's so many different ways to go with that. It's really, it makes the conference experience very unique to the entrepreneur and the founder who attends it at this point, especially in growth. Yeah. I haven't gone to Starter. I keep meaning to, like last year I was going to do a talk at Starter and then logistically I couldn't make that work out, and I couldn't make it work out again this year because my wife is like, all right, you have a finite number of conferences you can go to. Three is kind of my limit. You pick which three.
Right.
And
that would count as two.
Big Snow is one of them. Yeah. And I run Big Snow. So I can't, like, so that means I get to pick two other conferences. So MicroConf is next. And then the third one, I'm thinking that there's going to be this conference for an integration partner that we're working with right now, who I won't specifically call them out, but they have a conference later in the year, and it would probably be very, very valuable for me to go there to promote Recapture. Mm-hmm. So that's my third conference, right? So I can't, you know, all these other awesome conferences that come up, I can't do them. I can't do FemtoConf. I can't do NanoConf. I can't do Release Notes. I can't do, you know, I'm not doing Unite. I'm not doing Imagine. I'm not going to any other e-commerce conferences. It's like, oh,
yeah.
All right. I can do this.
Yeah. No, I can imagine. I mean, I'm going to FemtoConf in May, the 1st of May. And then I'll go to MicroConf Europe in October. And I'm thinking about doing a kind of Big Snow Tiny Conf without skiing. Sort of like, I think I'm going to call it European Founders Retreat. So just like, you know, rent a villa in Tuscany or something like that. And just have, you know, a dozen people come and drink wine and ride bikes and talk business and stuff for a few days. But anyways, that's a little teaser of something to come probably in the fall or early winter. But yeah, man, I mean, you got a finite amount of time. You got to go and make the most of it. I think going to MicroConf Starter Edition at this point would be really interesting because you would get a lot more of the shiny object stuff because it's a lot more tactical, right? Like you would go and hear all these like 0 to 10K stuff and you're like, well, you know, whatever. I'm at 10K. I could go do that also and, you know, get from 10 to 20 or whatever. I think the nature, I haven't been necessarily to the growth edition, is that it's maybe less of the shiny object and more of the kind of higher level stuff that makes you leave feeling better about what you're doing, as opposed to like Starter, I can imagine is just more like throwing shit at the wall and seeing what sticks. I don't know.
No, I wouldn't say that that's my impression of it. So with Starter, there's a lot more tactical talks. Yes, I would agree with that. But there's also a number of inspirational, how did I do what I did. And Growth actually has those too, but they're at a different scale. So like this year we had Jason Fried, who was talking about his experience with Basecamp and the venture investment that he had with Bezos and how they took money off the table with that and why he did it and that kind of stuff. So that's not something that if you're trying to get to 10K MRR, I mean, that sounds really cool and that's a cool story, but what does that mean for you? Because you're still struggling to get up to that first step in SaaS, right?
Right. Yep.
Jason and those guys at Basecamp, they're way beyond that. And there might be, you know, a lot of founders in the growth room where they're at 30, 40, 50, 80K MRR, and they're thinking, hey, maybe I want to get out of this. And what are my options? So that was kind of a theme this year. Several founders talked about why they picked to have venture. Rob specifically talked about this because of Tiny Seed, of course. And Jason mentioned this when he was talking about the Bezos investment. And Chris Savage from Wistia also talked about this when he ended up basically taking on debt to buy back his original investors. Mm-hmm. So he went from bootstrapped to VC to not bootstrapped.
Yeah.
That's not right. Bootstrapped to
VC back to bootstrapped.
Yeah. Back to bootstrapped again, essentially.
With debt though, which is
with debt. But he talked about how much they're making and he talked about some of the numbers. So I mean he took on this scary number of $17 million in debt, which just sounds like unbelievably huge to guys like you and me, but their burn rate, their run rate, you know, they're talking like less than 18 months worth of payback time for them at their current rates. And that obviously they're not paying it off 100%, but that's still pretty comfortable compared to where they were at. And he talked about their roller coaster ride and how they got unfocused and that they were doing all these random experiments, and then these random experiments didn't really pan out, and they were just kind of messing around. And then he just decided, okay, I have to make some tough decisions now. So yeah, I mean, it was super, it's interesting to hear those stories, because now, having been around for like 9 years, it's not like I'm close to a $17 million exit. I'm not even close to a $1 million exit. But these things are things that I'm thinking about. Like, if I'm going through and building a business, is it something that I'm truly going to do for the rest of my life? Or is it something that I'm going to do for the next 5 to 10 years and then think about, well, how do I move on from this here?
Yeah.
So there were, you know, there were lots of guys there from SureSwift Capital and FE International. There's another.
And that's the fox and the hen house. Those guys, I love both those guys, but I mean, those are like the perfect conferences for those guys to go to, huh?
They are. And it's funny, because somebody, in fact, Kevin McArdle got up. He's the head of SureSwift Capital, and he was sponsoring the conference, as was Thomas from FE International. And Kevin got up and said, you know, I heard somebody say it's the shark circling the waters here, whatever. And, you know, Kevin gave this long, well, it wasn't really long, it was just a brief thing. He was talking about, we're here to help if you need us or want us to help, but we're not like sitting here trying to be predatory, picking off businesses left and right like a bunch of chum, you know, which is kind of what that image entails. And, you know, I've had long conversations with Kevin privately on multiple microcomps at this point. And, you know, the funding model, I would say, is very polarizing. There's definitely a lot of people that, you know, some people were talking about Rob's talk afterwards, and they were saying, man, he's really sold out. And I sat back and I kind of thought about that. And I was like, well, wait a minute. It's not really a sellout. It's an evolution. He's moved on to a different place, and now he wants to help people that are where he was before and move them forward in a different way. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely, you know, this is like Democrats versus Republicans kind of thing here. You're VC or you're anti-VC, and it seems like those that want to meet in the middle are kind of met with skepticism and scorn from the quote pure bootstrapping crowd. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to all that, I think. But, you know, for one, I would love to sell a business to Kevin McArdle. I know someone who has done it, and it sounds like an absolutely wonderful experience. I mean, the team there at SureSwift is really strong. I know people like on their op side, and I know Kevin and other founders, and like they offer a really great service for someone who has a good business that they want to sell. And that's all it is. I mean, FE Internet, SureSwift Capital is just a buyer of businesses. They're not going to come in and steal your business away or something. You have to have a good business that is ultra profitable and easy to run. And they are just a buyer of businesses. They're not a predator, I don't think. I said the, you know, the fox and the hen house, because they would love to buy businesses from a lot of microconf type people. And I would love to sell one to them, because you think about like selling a business, and it's like a kind of a partnership, even if you only have like a 1 month you know, time that you have to work with these people. That's an intense 1 month, and the expectation of both sides is really intense and all this kind of stuff. So I mean, I think what Kevin and them are doing is like setting really clear expectations of like, we are here to buy high quality SaaS businesses. If you have a high quality SaaS business and you want to sell it, let's talk. And that's awesome, I think. And for like, you know, Rob and Tiny Seed and Tyler with Earnest, like, I think the thing about those two, you know, that model of like early stage seed investing for SaaS, whatever, you know, digital businesses, whatever, is providing a resource to people who, because of a lot of different kind of parts of their situation, really need it. You know, it might be that they're only nights and weekends, so they need this money so they can quit their job and go full time. It might be because they're in a place where the dynamic of their industry is changing really quickly and they need money to pour into it right now. And you think about like Rob with Drift, right? Like Rob could have grown slowly and not like self-funded as quickly and as much as he did. Because you hear him talk about like how much he put into Drip and like he bootstrapped and all this kind of stuff, but he really self-funded it. So it's not like bootstrapping, you know? So I think that like to say, oh, you know, funding is never good, no matter what, I'm just going to bootstrap the end is a little like short-sighted. I don't know. It doesn't always tell the whole story, because I think there are definitely times when, because of a lot of different variables, it is absolutely the way to go, you know? And I mean, it's an individual decision for everybody. So there's not a right and wrong, kind of like you're saying, there's not a right and wrong answer.
Yeah. And so let me throw out some statistics. So I was talking with Einar from Tiny Seed, and they, I don't want to reveal the exact numbers because this was provided to me in confidence, but they received almost 1,000 applications for Tiny Seed, and they're going to accept 10.
No.
And they said of those applications, 100 or more were like seriously viable. They would really want to buy them businesses.
Well, yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's like those are huge numbers. Huge numbers. So, I mean, there might be a group of people that are all talking and they're down on, you know, the whole fund strapping idea and the notion of Rob as a sellout. But there's also a huge group of people that are all saying, fuck yeah, I want to do this. I need this money. This would make a big difference in my business. And, you know, they were definitely seeing some very high quality applications. And
there's a difference, you know, exactly like I need this money and it would make a difference in my business. There's a big difference between those two. And that's not always the same person, you know? There's the guy that can't quit his job until he gets whatever the money they're giving, or there's a guy that's like, wow, this could, you know, pour some gasoline on the fire.
Yeah.
I can imagine, you know.
They are definitely looking for the gasoline set, not the let me get started set. And I guess quite a few of the ones that applied, as I understand it, didn't have any funding at all.
Like, no revenue.
I'm sorry, no revenue, not funding.
Yeah.
They had no revenue at all, which is not what they're really looking for. They're looking for something in the 3 to 5 range. Mm. And then they, you know, they're looking at basic statistics like what's their churn, what's their growth rate, what's the founder team look like, what's their background, yada, yada, yada. And even with that filter, they still had a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, something else I want to talk about, and maybe we should do, I think we should do a whole episode on this, is like built to sell or built to run forever, like Basecamp. But I would love to hear how the, is it Chris Savage from Wistia and Jason yes. Fried talks were kind of similar, and how they were different. Because those were the ones that, like, you know, seeing it from a Twitter perspective, had the most people saying like, well, these people really, you know, did it right or whatever. But I look at both those businesses, obviously, like ones you can just run forever. So I'd love to hear kind of how in person people reacted to those two talks.
How did they react in person? Well, it kind of felt like the same reaction. Everybody clapped afterward.
No, you know what I mean? Like when you're unpacking it in the hallway afterwards, like.
All right. So I'm going to throw out my bias here right off the top. So I listened to Jason Fried's Q&A and I liked hearing what he had to say, but what he said felt very unactionable. Like he kept talking about things and would say, well, this is just the way we did it. That's the way we felt like doing it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, cool. How do I apply that to my business? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It was obvious that I don't want to give the impression that I don't respect Jason Fried. That is absolutely not the impression I want to give here. Jason Fried's a smart guy. He and DHH have done amazing things with Basecamp. They got lucky. They had great timing. And these are, I'm not embellishing on this. This is what he specifically said. He said, Basecamp had really excellent timing. We were lucky because we were the first ones to the space here. We were able to innovate quickly because of Rails. I mean, there was lots of things that came together for them. He said that if I had to start over today, I would have trouble replicating those. And if you were trying to emulate me, you would have trouble replicating that as well. because those were conditions that were only present in like 2003 to 2005. And after that, you know, it's gone. So a lot of what he said was sort of like looking back and then trying to put a mental model on what happened at the time. And I think that's really difficult as an entrepreneur, because you look at things and what makes sense now, if you look at it 2 years from now, you're going to look back with a very fuzzy mind, unless you have a super retentive mind where you can just say, oh, I remember exactly what I was thinking there. That's not me. I have to write things down, and I'll go back and I'll read my notes 2 years later and I'll be like, what? Mm-hmm. What was I thinking here? I don't understand this. And sometimes I'll be like, oh God, that was horrible. I mean, my blog, for example, is like 2 years of my thinking that has been completely codified into the bones of the internet. And if I ever want to embarrass myself, I just go back and I read that. But when Jason was going through and talking about all this stuff, it was obvious that he spent a lot of time thinking about it, and a lot of time, you know, between him and DHH and the others on the team working these things out and trying to figure it out. But it wasn't something that he could translate into, you know, we did X, then we did Y, and that produced Z. Mm-hmm. And with Chris's talk, I felt like there was more, we tried this, and this is what happened, and then that was the result of this, and then we did this other, you know, so it was more of a, and it was less tactical as well, but his was more about the story on how they basically reclaimed the company for themselves and why they did that.
Okay.
Whereas Jason's was a little more kind of back and forth. Here's a random question. Here's a random answer. Cause he did a Q&A and Chris.
Okay. So, I mean, the formats are different and those guys kind of point in their journey is different. I'm sure Jason Fried is twice as far into it as Chris Savage, right? Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I totally hear what you're saying. And I find, and this is absolutely with the utmost respect, but I find Jason Cohen to be a little bit of the same way. And it's like the curse of knowledge and the curse of success, I think. Like when you hear him interviewed, like he was interviewed on the Art of Product podcast a while ago. And like, he has been so successful and it's been kind of like a long time that he's been successful. That for him to say, like, you should do this and you should do this and you should do this to someone who's just getting started is really hard because, frankly, he doesn't have visibility into any of the shit that any of us are doing anymore. You know, like, I think these guys that are so successful and have been so successful for so long think in a totally different way and at a totally different level than any of us. And I think that's okay. And it's to be like congratulated for them. And it's like a little bit something that I aspire to say, like, I don't want to think about how I'm going to go answer the 17 support emails that we have right now. I want to think about like partnerships and integrations and like really, really like high level marketing stuff. And those guys are 10 steps ahead of me. So I don't know. It's like, I think it's really good to say like, Dave, like you recognize that those guys are talking in a different way. And that's like something to aspire to maybe, you know? Like I don't fault them for that at all. And that like that's just where they are and that's how they think and that's who they are these days. They started just like us. And so maybe we all can hope to get to where they are, you know, and from a mindset perspective.
Yeah. And I think that's important to understand that everybody is on a different step of this journey. And, you know, I think this has been mentioned before on our show, if not in a microconf. It's hard to look at somebody who is multiple steps down the path farther than you and try to get something out of their journey because they're just too far ahead to point out where you need to go from where you are.
Yeah.
And the same is true. Like if I'm talking to somebody at Starter and they're still trying to get going on things, I'm going to probably end up giving meaningless advice to them saying, oh, well, you need to get product market fit. Oh, you need to build an audience. You need to do this. And to them, they'll be like, well, how do I take that somewhere? Like, okay, great. I need to do that. But where do I build that? How do I start with that? All of those things are hard to follow unless you're close on the path to somebody else, which of course is why we have masterminds and you have people that are close and you try to use those close relationships to help pull people up to the next stage and push people along into the following stage.
Yeah. 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 It's just interesting, again, coming like from the Twitter perspective, those two talks happened like back to back at MicroConf this year, and like the response to them and people talking about them on Twitter and stuff was really interesting. And I mean, the one that I took away that I think I would like to get to at some point someday with some business is like, you know, Jason Fried saying Basecamp throws off millions of dollars of free cash flow a year. And I'm like, there you go. That's that's what all of us are here for, no matter like who you are and what business or whatever, is just like build some awesome stuff that everybody loves, whatever. Everybody likes Basecamp. And it's a business that is just going to stay here for a very long time and make a bunch of money for everybody, not for you and for your employees and profit sharing and investors or whatever. And like, I think that's like the ultimate success. It's just like, this business is going to rock for a long time and everyone is going to be better because of it. You know, that was amazing to hear, you know?
Yeah. Now, a talk that you haven't mentioned yet, and one that I want to specifically mention here today, is Rob. You know, Rob always gives a great talk, usually at Growth at this point. I don't think he talks at Starter anymore. He probably talks at MicroConf Europe. But he specifically mentioned like the state of bootstrapping 2019. And one of the things that he talked about that I think I've heard him mention before in a passing conversation was all marketing tactics have a half-life. And that half-life is roughly between 18 to 24 months. So let's say that, you know, if you look back to 2014, where everybody started talking about email marketing automation, if you used email marketing automation in 2014, you crushed it because hardly anybody was doing it. And if you understood what you were doing with that, you could make a crap ton of money in that space with that tactic. In 2016, that got a little harder. And now here we are in 2019, it got even harder than that. So I think that's what we're seeing here, is that it's never been easier to get started, but it's harder than ever to achieve escape velocity with any kind of a business, whether you're doing WordPress plugins, a Shopify app, a SaaS. It doesn't really matter, because competition has gone up, the noise has gone up. All of those things are working against you, where you didn't have those things 5 years ago as much. And so that, I think, is what I keep feeling just viscerally in my business. Like, I learned this tactic in MicroConf. Why the hell did it work then? And it's not working now. Cold email is harder than it was 4 years ago, right?
Yeah.
So why is cold email not working for me? Because that tactic's half-life has gone down quite a bit. It's not as effective as it used to be. If you have to be like even more creative, even more tactical with it. And I just keep coming back to that when I'm thinking about more things that are working and things that are not. The ones that I found that are working for recapture and for the plugins are the tactics where I'm taking the tactic, but I'm pulling it out of the mainstream approach and I'm doing something a little different.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think for sure. I mean, like, obviously if you're doing the same things as everyone else, you have no chance basically to stand out. The best you can hope for is just being in a place with a ton of demand and having a good product that kind of captures a part of that. Yeah, I mean, I look at content marketing like that. I looked at LinkedIn cold outreach like that, and cold email and all these kind of things that you might be able to be a little bit successful unless you have a really good spin on them or a unique approach like you're talking about to be able to stand out and have it be really effective.
Yeah, it's just that's why it's getting harder. And the thing that I like about Rob's strategic thinking is that he kind of helps me tease out what it is that's like bugging me about my business that I can't quite explain or verbalize. And so when I see these talks at MicroConf, I'm like, that's what's been frustrating me. Okay. Now I understand. And once I understand, you know, that gives you the ability to either work around it or change what you're doing or just decide that you're going to take a different approach altogether and understand why that's breaking.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. So that was probably my number one thing that I walked away strategically. There was some great tactical stuff. So Joanna Weeb had a wonderful talk about the 7 money words. Mm. And we should probably have her come on and talk about that at some point. But words that basically help move your copy along or improve your emails or get people to keep reading, stuff like that. So that was really good. You know, I've never listened to a Joanna Weed talk that I didn't sit there and take furious notes on. How many years has she been going to MicroConf? Years.
Yeah.
Years
now. Yeah. I mean, she was on our show, shit, Dave, like episode 20 or 30, maybe. So like it's a long time ago she was on the show. Yeah.
It was a long time ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's still kicking ass and taking names. What was the other one? Oh, Patrick Campbell from Price Intelligently.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to talk about the Gumroad guy too.
Yeah. We'll talk about Sahil in a minute. But Patrick was the closing talk at MicroConf, and he gave a very poignant story about leverage, truth, and fear, and what you need as an entrepreneur to succeed based on those 3 things.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I'm not going to reiterate all of Patrick's talk. I will not do it justice. You should go to microconfrecap.com and read the notes. It's going to be way better. And even that's going to be a poor imitation of actually hearing the talk when it was given. But Patrick related several key events when he was building Price Intelligently and why he made certain decisions and what ended up happening as a result of those decisions. And it was also interesting because he was showing like his revenue graphs, and I didn't realize this, but Price Intelligently made nothing. And I'm not exaggerating the nothing part. We're talking about like very close to zero for years.
Really?
Really? Yes. Yes. And that was part of a strategy, actually. I mean, at first it wasn't. Nobody walks into the business saying, you know what? I want to build something. I want to put all this work into it. I want to give it away for free. And maybe someday I'll make money. La, 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 la. No, it's never like that, right? But Patrick's, originally he went in with a certain level of thinking that didn't work, had to switch to a freemium model, and then was trying to build it up so that basically he was building up his own customer base. I mean, you and I are both Price Intelligently customers. I don't pay him anything at this point. I'm using him basically as a analytics tool.
Mm.
And maybe you use him for retain. I don't know.
We do. Yeah. We use him for retain. Yeah.
Okay. So you're paying him a little bit now, but what he's trying, I mean, he basically went through all this pricing analysis and was saying, if you're making less than 50K MRR, the likelihood and the willingness to pay at that level is zero. But at 50K MRR, like everything changes.
If the business owner are making less than 50K, then your willingness to pay for a tool?
Yes.
Mm.
Yeah. So he, I mean, you know, you've seen how he does his pricing surveys and stuff like that.
No,
he did it across a very, he's got the data for it. And it's funny because he made you, you know, he did this and he showed you his data on this. And then he talked about other things. He said, you know, it was confirmation bias. And he was talking about how your confirmation bias makes you accept or reject things out of hand, even if the data in front of you contradicts what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And he showed us a direct example, took a survey in the audience, and it showed it, you know, there was a pro bootstrapping thing here. Everybody was on board with that. Then he showed an anti one. He had the data for both. And he said, you know, raise your hand if this makes you kind of uncomfortable or that makes you bristle a little bit. Or maybe you just outright hate it. And, you know, a lot of people were shifting in their seats at that point. So it's true. He was talking about how that really messes with us in our business. And it's really hard to look past that sometimes.
Yeah.
And he also had another great thing. He was talking about an episode that I saw a little bit of in Twitter, but he talked about the whole story of how somebody in his organization, he never found out who, was posting fraudulent reviews against competitors' products. He was basically putting negative reviews for the other products and posting positive reviews for Price Intelligently.
Hmm.
And of course, the competitors that are going against ChartMogul and Baremetrics, like, you know, they lit up Twitter and they were not pleased about this. And so the story that Patrick told was basically, how is it that he handled this with integrity? Because, you know, he hadn't actually personally done this. He hadn't ordered them to do this. They went out and did it on their own. He never figured out who it was. He couldn't find out who it was. And the end result was he just had to own it, and it sucked, but he went and did all of these things to make it right.
Yeah.
And then made it very clear in his business that this was not acceptable again. So, you know, but this was an extremely embarrassing, painful, personally difficult time for him. So, you know, it's another one of those great founder stories that you see somebody who goes through some difficult stuff and they come out on the other side as a better person and with a good story, and, you know, their business is healthier because of this difficult time that they went through, even though it sucked.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was really cool.
And then I know that like the timing is really interesting for Sahil from Gumroad, because he wrote this like really great article about like trying to build a $1 billion business and then ending up with like a pretty nice, you know, bootstrap lifestyle business in Gumroad now. Was the talk pretty well received at MicroConf?
It was. Sahil was another one of those that was giving a very personal reflection on what happened. So it's kind of funny because, you know, Gumroad and Sahil spent years out in the Bay Area, and that's where Gumroad was founded. And eventually he ended up having to move to Provo, Utah, which is about the whitest place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and jokingly said, except for maybe this room, which got some uncomfortable chuckles. It was actually quite funny. But he was talking about like all of the different things that he ended up doing in Gumroad and where he was at and why, you know, he went from the darling of TechCrunch to 15 months later having some really negative front page news also from TechCrunch just because he ran into hard problems. So he had to, you know, fire 15 people at the beginning of 2015, and he was like losing $350,000 for the year. Like,
wow.
Oh no, no, I'm sorry. $351,000 a month. He was losing $350,000 a month. I mean, if you want your bunghole to pucker, that's the number that's going to do it. I mean, I don't even have to get that big to have mine pucker that hard, but I just can't imagine going from, you know, being the darling of the tech world like that to losing more than I make a year in my annual salary. I mean, that's just, oh my God.
Yeah.
No. That was hard. I mean, he had a lot of visceral stuff, but then, you know, he kind of turned it into this bootstrap thing after he laid everybody off. He made some hard changes on that, and Gumroad continued to grow. Like he has the, if you go to microconfrecap.com, you'll see the processing volume that's coming through Gumroad. It never really dropped off. I mean, there's like little wiggles along the way, but if you look from 2012 to 2019, it's up and to the right the whole time. So it wasn't like he went from VCs were really interested in him because of his model, because of what the business was doing, because of how much it was processing, to after the, you know, firing of everybody here, that VCs weren't willing to talk to him, yet he was still a profitable business. He was still making money on this. He was, mm-hmm. you know, and then he got like a really lucky thing with Kleiner Perkins, a big VC firm out in San Francisco. And they basically said, yeah, we're going to sell our ownership back to them for a dollar. Can we discuss this? So $16.5 million in investments turned into $2.5 million overnight. It was like, what?
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, just some crazy, crazy stuff.
So one of the things, and it might have been from Sahil that I heard, is that I think the quote was like, if you don't have a customer acquisition strategy before you get started, your business will fail. Was that from him? Am I properly quoting and attributing that?
That might be him. I'm looking on the thing here. I don't see. That sounds like it was him. It was either him or Chris Savage. I'm pretty sure it was not Jason Fried because that was on a slide. So I think it was Sahil. That sounds right.
I mean, that kind of like, just talking about Patrick Campbell too, is that like thinking back now with like, you know, Castos is almost 2 years old, Dave, it'll be 2 years old in about a month. You know, thinking about like customer acquisition channel or, you know, built-in marketing strategy and pricing and like a good pricing model. I think we have both of those figured out pretty decently. And if we didn't, or we don't, you know, if you didn't, then I can totally see it being really difficult to grow. Like if you don't have a marketing channel, if you don't have a way to reach your customers and you don't have a pricing model and a growth avenue within pricing, like expansion revenue, then growing is really, really, really hard. So I mean, I think that like, I think I read that and then I obviously like know Patrick talked and I've heard him talk about like the power of expansion revenue a handful of times, those two things kind of made like perked my ears up to say, like, you know, talking about like the ideal business model and stuff like that. Like those two things are pretty much all that matter, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I would strongly agree with that. And, you know, obviously Sahil had some pretty strong opinions about things. And I think if you're a founder and you're that successful, there's definitely things that you are strongly for and strongly against. There's not a lot of, you know, you're saying, oh, well, I don't know how I really feel about that. It seems like most of the founders that I've met have all had very strong opinions of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sounds like a great conference, man. I am sorry I didn't get a chance to go, but I will again try to go next year. I think it'll be a little later in the year next year because I know it's like right before tax season this year, which is kind of awkward and stuff. But I'm going to try to make it next year, and that'll be fun to catch up in person. But yeah, sounds like a wonderful time.
Yeah. So next year they're saying that it is not going to be at the Tropicana. So you heard it here first. If you didn't hear it at the conference, probably not at the Tropicana next year.
No, that's not like the end of the world, right? I mean, I've been to Vegas a bunch and Tropicana is not like the best place ever, right?
You know, it isn't, but it's not the worst either. That was the Riviera the first year.
Okay. Because it's not on the strip or just it's not nice?
Yes. Okay. It's also torn down now, so we don't have to worry about it anymore. But oh, that really? Very first year, oh yeah, they ripped it down a year or two after we went. The casino, the reason that we were able to get such great rates there was the fact that it was A, off strip, B, really old, and C, I'm sure they just didn't have that much traffic coming
in. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, Tropicana's fine. I don't, you know, my wife has a problem with the word fine, but I will use the word fine here, and I don't mean it in the sense that my wife means it. All you married men out there in the audience know exactly what this means. But yeah, I mean, the Tropicana is okay. I've got no problems with it. There are definitely better, ritzier places, and there are definitely worse places you can go.
Yeah. But that's Tropicana's not why you go to MicroConf, right? You don't go for like the wonderful accommodations and gambling stuff. You go for the conference, right?
I go for the conference. Yeah. Although this year it was nice because we had the first, hopefully annual Dungeons and Dragons event at MicroConf. Mm,
right. You were talking about that. How was it?
Yeah. It was as nerdy as it sounds. I loved every minute of it. And we did this little 4-hour fast dungeon thing here, and we saved the world. Our party saved the world.
Awesome. Patrick
McKenzie was playing, and his character died within, somebody said 15 minutes. I think he lasted a little longer than that. We played for 4 hours. I'm pretty sure he was dead in the first hour. He made some interesting choices. His character, he role played his character like dead on. It was hilarious. But the choices that he made for the character were not good choices that matched up with the dungeon. So I'll leave it at that. Yeah. It basically caused him to be way more reckless than he really should have been.
Going for broke.
He totally went for broke. But it was hilarious and it was fun. So
awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. All right, man. Well, I'm glad it was a good time. And for everyone else who went, if anybody else has things that they really took away from the conference, either growth or starter that they would like to share with us, leave us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com. If anyone ever wants to leave us a voicemail, we would totally dig that and would play it live on the show. And yeah, thanks to Rob and Mike for putting on a great conference again. And if anybody has any questions or comments for us, shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, or leave us a comment in the post for this episode. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.